It's time for spring training for baseball players and for pilots. I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, and we're approaching the beginning officially of spring. Bob, thanks for joining us today.
Well, Paul, it's always a joy to be here.
You drew the analogy between baseball spring training, which is going on in the month of March, and spring training for pilots. What kind of spring training do we need to get ready for the season, if you want to use that analogy?
Hey, you know, I was catching some news items on spring training, and it's always a refreshing thought when those of us in the northern climates see spring training beginning. It's a sign that, you know, certainly that spring and summer is about to come. And I look at these baseball players, professional baseball players, and I mean, these are the epitome of athletes in most cases. You know, they look very capable, but yet they go through a month or so of spring training just to get as sharp as they were at the end of the previous season. You know, they had several months have gone by, they've been inactive, and in order to play at their best, they go through this spring ritual of just getting ready. And a couple of things happened to me over the last month or so that reminded me of the need for spring training. In one particular situation, I had not flown a round conventional gauge airplane, we call them steam gauge airplane, for about 4 months. I had been flying just the glass G-1000 airplanes, and I got back into my own Cessna 210 after it had undergone some lengthy maintenance. And without thinking, I took the airplane right up, filed IFR, climbed up through instrument conditions, and immediately found myself very uncomfortable trying to acclimate to the traditional six-pack steam gauge scan that's required, simply because I hadn't done it in about 3 months. And I'm thinking to myself, this is if this is happening to me, and I routinely fly in instrument conditions, albeit on a different type of a panel, imagine how it affects an individual that hasn't been on the gauges, in any gauges, in an airplane in the clouds for 3, 4, 5, or even 6 months. This is an extremely awkward situation, proving that some of the most fragile skills that we humans have are the ability to fly an airplane after several weeks or more, or even month or more, of inactivity. Worse, the fragility, if you will, of our instrument scan skills if we haven't been in the clouds for a month or so. And so I just equated this to not making a great big deal of it, but every spring, you know, along about March, April, if we're not flying every day in the system, then it would be a good idea to engage a qualified flight instructor and say, hey, listen, let's go out for a few hours and get the dust off.
Well, there's kind of two issues here. Let me talk first, Bob, about the transition back to steam gauges from glass panel. It seems to me that would be kind of similar whether you've been flying glass panels all winter or whether you haven't been flying at all. In either case, if you hop back into a plane in the springtime, probably especially with steam gauges, and try to fly IFR, this could be an issue. It's not necessarily that you were distracted or reoriented to glass as much as you just lost that scan capability.
That's right. Exactly right. Well stated, Paul. But nonetheless, I had been in the clouds virtually almost every day this past winter when we could get up in the stuff. I wasn't feeling uncomfortable at all in the clouds. I was feeling terribly uncomfortable, however, on the old steam gauges. Now, had I combined that discomfort on the steam gauges with discomfort with being in the clouds, then I truly would have my hands full. You know, we have regulations that say that the instrument pilot must do 6 approaches every 6 months, simulated or real, in order to maintain legal currency. And this is one of those regulations which I think are woefully, and I emphasize the word woefully, inadequate. It's like we can say we can take off in 0-0 conditions under Part 91, even though it's permissive under the rules. The thought of going several months or more without flying in the clouds, either on round gauges or glass panels, and then just go up there for the first time, I mean, that's a suicide mission, in my opinion. But the good news, Paul, just like spring training, it's so easy to prevent. It is just so wonderfully easy to prevent by going out to the airport, finding a qualified current, skilled instrument pilot. Doesn't have to be an instructor, but find somebody to go up there with you who is very capable and proficient on the gauges and get the rust off, work it through. Not only the instrument pilot, Paul, but the VFR pilot, the fellow who put his airplane away last October, and now with spring coming is, you know, dusting off the door on the hangar and opening it up for the first time in 2 or 3 months and climbing in that airplane and hoping to fly skillfully. It's difficult to do. It's a very difficult task for a baseball player to do. How are we as pilots expected to do it?
Well, Bob, when we come back from the break, let's talk about the VFR recreational pilot side of this, because there's some things other than instrument scans that decay over the winter. Bob Miller is my guest. Back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près de moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, talking about shaking the rust off, spring training. And Bob, we talked for a few minutes about your experience instructing in Cessna 172s with glass panels during the winter, getting back into your own 210 with steam gauges and finding yourself rusty, and relating that to what may happen to a lot of pilots after the end of a long winter. But let's talk about the recreational VFR guy who hasn't flown anything all winter. And it may not be anything to do with an instrument scan. It may have to do with things like crosswind landings, or even just basically how to get through his checklists that maybe he had committed to his memory in the fall. Now, you have been a proponent, obviously, of getting a flight review more often than biennially. Maybe this is the perfect opportunity.
Yes, whether it's required by the rules or not, this is something that I believe every pilot should do. Unless you're flying, you know, if you're flying 400 hours or more in a given year, 400 or 500 hours, and you're flying regularly, okay, I would say that's fine. You don't need it. But if you've got a situation where you have not flown in the last 2 months, and this is your first time back in an airplane, by all means, go up with somebody who is skilled and proficient. And I'm not trying to sell the flight instruction industry here. There are many, many wonderfully skilled pilots, of course, that you can go up with just to get the rust off. It doesn't mean that you need instruction per se, that you don't know what you're doing, but it might be just a simple lapse of a reaction on a bounced or ballooned landing, or what to do in a, like you say, in a crosswind, or perhaps joining the final approach course just a wee bit too slow or too steep, where we may be subjecting ourselves to too high a risk for a possible stall spin scenario. Again, I don't think it's any criticism of our skills as a pilot, as it is no criticism of a baseball player. It's just a wise individual who goes out there and says, I recognize the fact that my skills are rusty. I mean, golfers go to the driving range, you know, before they go out on the open courses when the season starts. You see them all of the time. This is not unusual, but for some reason, whether it's the ego of the pilot who says, no, I am a pilot first and foremost and always, even though I have not flown in the last several weeks or more, I'm going to climb back in that airplane and just go out and do it. I think that's a hazardous mindset and one that is largely responsible for a number of our, particularly our maneuvering accidents among VFR pilots.
Bob, what are the considerations if you're not 90-day current to going up with another pilot? Is that pilot considered a passenger?
Anytime you go up with another pilot, you first are going to ascertain who is the PIC. If one pilot is not current, for example, he has not flown three landings in the last 90 days, clearly he has to go up with a pilot who is current because one is a passenger. But those are somewhat academic. As long as one individual in that airplane is current and proficient, then the pilot requiring spring training, he or she is going to benefit from that experience. I mean, we have to keep the thing legal. We can't say we don't want to send two pilots up together. You know, they may be buddies or partners on an airplane and say, you know, neither one of them had flown in the last 2 or 3 months. Having them going up together is a little bit like the old proverb, you know, the blind leading the blind. No, we need to be going up with somebody who is better than we are. You know, I consider myself, and I hope this doesn't sound arrogant. I've been accused of having that attitude from time to time, but I have my own mentor pilots. I fly with people far more skilled than I am, simply because that expands and increases my envelope. You know, I was up with an FAA inspector just the other day doing the chief pilot ride for our Part 141 school. A very highly skilled pilot, and I sat back and I just learned. And so I don't think any of us reach a point where we've said, you know, we've reached the epitome of our piloting skills. So whether you're an advanced flight instructor, go up with somebody anyway. If you're a novice, go up with somebody who's just a little bit better than you. This is true not only in flying. Paul, you know that as well as I do, that in any endeavor, you know, hang around with smarter, more skilled individuals. By nature, it's going to rub off and benefit us.
I would just add that if you are going to try to find somebody to go up with anyway, you know, if you look at the cost of getting a flight review, it's not going to be that significant in the overall cost of a season's worth of flying. And there might be no better time to get one than when you're first pulling it out of the hangar in the spring.
Sure, that's right. It's a good time to do it. It should simply be a rite of passage.
Well, Bob, as always, we appreciate it. We will catch you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
Bob Miller is the proprietor of Bob Miller Flight Training in Western New York, also the publisher of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. Find out more about both, including the March issue of OTA, at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.